Accession number 18580, Reel 2.
Andy Allen, Reel 3. Reel 2.
Well, the bonus was set up that you grossed your catch. That was what the actual catch made. Then you took off your expenses, wages, coal, and anything they got, wages. But the crew had paid for the food. The crew paid for the food. That came off our wages. And this is how your bonus was assessed. And then the next day you went down, you got your oil money, it might be 8 shillings, 9 shillings then, which is quite a lot of money by today's standards. You had 1 day in, 1 day landing, 1 day clear. That was to get your all your stores and your whatever you wanted aboard. And the next day you were at sea. And you may be 22, 23 days at sea. So it wasn't much time for life, really.
How would you spend your money?
Give it to wife.
Didn't you spend anything on yourself?
No. I never broke a pay packet in my life. That's my life. She is. Family were my life. I only had one girl. Well, I had two girls, but we lost the first one. And I was an SOS sent out for me, but at a time we only got the last of the message and we didn't know who it was for. It could have been for anybody. So we just carried on fishing.
So you didn't spend your money on drink?
God, no, I never tasted a drop of drink in my life.
You've been a teetotaler all your life?
All my life.
Was that typical of an Aberdeen fisherman?
No. My father would have gone down for the third time and rum to see if you could drown yourself. That's literally true. I was four brothers of us. I was two teetotalers and two liked to drink.
Why did you become a teetotaler?
I became a teetotaler when I was at my mother's knee. That's when I became a teetotaler.
Because she told you?
Yes, I used to go to the Blue Ribboners, what they called the Blue Ribboners then.
What were they?
They were people who hated drink. And I was brought up in the Blue Ribboners. And my younger brother, he was brought up by my mother, who was a Blue Ribboner as well. And he was taught to hate drink, and he does hate drink. Same as me. All right, we could go in a pub, we could go in a pub. Half what you want, but don't try and make me drink.
Why did they call them Blue Ribboners?
Well, when your birthday was on, you used to get a birthday card with a blue ribbon on it. For every year, if you behaved yourself and you kept the vow, I was a Blue Ribboner. See, the thing is, there was a Catholic priest in Aberdeen. This is my uncle Jim. I was a Catholic priest in Aberdeen, and before they went away to sea, my uncle Jim, now and again, used to go up and see the Catholic priest. And he used to say to him, I'm going to sign the pledge this trip. So the priest used to give him a final drink. They never signed the pledge, but they got the final drink.
Are you a Catholic?
No. Oh, no.
So was the Blue Ribbon organization...
Protestant.
Which church was that?
Well, it's a church is East Church of St. Clements. You know, East Church... the East Church in Aberdeen, where I was married, was just round the corner and up and there. There were two churches together, and we were in the East Church. We were married in the East Church. And we were in the choir in the East Church.
Is this a Presbyterian church?
No, Protestant.
Like Church of Scotland?
Church of Scotland. And then the thing is that I had a nice voice. I was singing in the church, and this man, the verger, he says, "Why don't you go into choir, Andy?" And I says, "There's not a choir in this church." He says, "No." He says, "But go to the Episcopalian church." He says, "They'll teach you how to train your voice." So I went to St. Margaret's in the Gallagher. I was a Protestant, but I was in there singing with them.
So you were an Episcopalian?
I was a Protestant. I was a Protestant, but I was in that Episcopalian church singing along with them. And we used to get half a crown every 3 months as our fee. 2 and 6 pence, I wouldn't have called the Queen my cousin when I got my 2 and 6 pence, not me.
Were you still fishing when war was declared?
Yeah.
So, did you hear Neville Chamberlain declare war on Germany?
Yeah, heard it on a Sunday morning. We were in what you call a Sunday boat then. That was, you landed on Saturday, and you descended, and then you went back to sea on the Monday. And we were living in James Street then, down in the dockside in Aberdeen. And we heard, everybody was out. They said there was going to be a special announcement at 11 o'clock. The day war was declared. And we went out in the street, and we waited for 11 o'clock. We heard Neville Chamberlain's message, and we were in a state of war with Germany.
How did you feel about it?
Well, frankly, I just had a young wife. I was a bit sorry for the people, not for me. I said, well, I'll have to go. Because I was in the Territorial Army in 1937. I was a dispatch rider there. In the Territorial Army, I said, well, I'll be getting my calling up papers when they want me. But when we were fishing off Aberdeen, when the German pilots were coming in, they used to come down to very low and wave to us going past. No machine guns, no bombs, nothing, just wave to us going past. I'd say, "Hi, boys."
Why did you join the TA in 37?
My uncle was in the signals. I was a bit backward, not backward in brain or anything like that, but I was a poor mixer. So my Uncle John, he says to me, "Look, you do 2 years in the territorials." He says, "You're in the reserved occupation if anything happens. They won't take you for a start." He said, "But do 2 years." He says, "And mix." So that's the reason I was in the territorials.
In what way were you a poor mixer?
Well, I only had my family, my wife, and as I said to you, my wife and my family was my whole life. And then I didn't need anything else. I had all I wanted.
So you joined the Corps of Signals?
Yeah.
Which unit of the Corps of Signals did you join?
51st Highland Division.
In 1937?
Yeah. The Highland Division was from the dawn of time. There was always Highlandmen there.
What kind of training did you get in the TA pre-war?
Very good training. We did square bashing, and then we had I was a dispatch rider, and then I moved from being a dispatch rider to a lineman.
So you had time for it between your fishing trips?
Yes. I used to fall in. They knew that I was a fisherman. But there was times when I didn't go to sea because there was something on at the army. I said, no, I'm not going this time. I'm going to have a go at the army.
Could you afford to lose the money?
Well, my wife was a very, very good keeper of the purse. And as I told you previously, I never broke a pay packet. I never broke a pay packet in my life. Never do now. What we have is one pocket and one purse. I've never been anywhere else. So if the money was there, I said, right, I'll have a go here.
Now, when were you called up after war was declared?
My daughter was born on the 16th. My daughter that I have now, the first one died when I was at sea, but my daughter that's here now, she was born on the 16th day of June, on a Sunday. And I'll give you, when we take this off, I'll give you a laugh about that. And on a Monday, the chimney went on fire. On a Tuesday, I got my papers in. On a Thursday, I was on the train for Whitby. And I never seen her then again. I got 3 days leave. And I seen her for 3 days. And then never seen her again. When I come back, she's going to school.
So you were called up June 1940?
June 1940.
And you went to Whitby?
Went to Whitby, mustered there, and I was about, they had a clean out of the ex-TA man in Scotland, and man who wanted to join up, and I was about 45 of us Scotsmen went down to Whitby to join a holding battalion there. But then you see, we had already Dunbar Square training. So when the scene, they put us on a square, and then when they seen how good we were, not through being good, but just having the knowledge that we had before. When they seen this, they separated us, and they put us down to the GPO school at Sydenham, southeast London. And we learned the lines there, the GPO way, the lines. And then came the London Blitz.
Were you in that?
Yeah.
Can you tell me in detail about your memories of the London Blitz, please?
Oh yes. We were at the place they called the Kirkdale Road in southeast Sydenham. We went to school all day, and then we went fire watching and things, jobs they got at night. Because things were a bit sticky. And then we started, we were working the southeast barrage area. And the air formation, with the air formation signals, we were doing the leading up work for them. We were laying the lines, bringing up there, and then they were taken from there into the air formation. We seen Sailor Marlin, Cobber Kane, seen all these lads down there, because we were in the outer barrage area.
Did you get to know them at all?
No, not very well. No. We were only doing a job. We were on the signals, doing a job.
So you haven't got any stories about Cobber Kane or Selma?
No. I'll tell you what. We had the Polish, some of the Polish Air Force down there. God, they were bitter. They couldn't get out the plane, get our service, to get up there again. He used to be screaming at the mechanics, to get him up again, to get him up again.
So they had a hatred of the Germans?
Oh, they had a hatred of the Germans. As I'm going to tell you later.
What do you remember about the bombing when you were in Sydenham?
Oh, we were just in a bad area. We were south of Catford and places like that, and we just caught a lot of flak there. And we were lying. The church was across the road from the where we used to get our food, because he couldn't put us all up there. And we were lying in this church. And then at night, when they started coming in heavy, we were out and watching everything. Going around watching everything. Seeing if people were all right. If there was anybody in the road, come on, get home. And we caught a lot of flak there. We caught quite a bit of flak there. But fortunately, there was nobody killed. None of our lads. A lot of civilians killed. But none of our lads. We're landing to get our head down then.
But did you take shelter when the bombs were falling?
I stood in the mouth of shelter, yeah.
What kind of shelters?
On the street.
Brick shelters?
Brick and concrete. Sandbags in front.
Do you remember any particular streets or buildings that were hit where you were?
Oh, yes. I was the exchange, the post office exchange, telephone exchange at Benz. I was three bombs fell there, one there, one there, one there, and the Benz exchange in there. See that door there, that fireproof door there? When the bomb blast took the glass, it pushed shards of glass straight through the door and never broke the glass. Terrific. But then you see, you've not only got blast, you've got the vacuum after. And that's what mainly kills people, because it takes their lungs in.
How frightening was the bombing for you?
You didn't look on it as a fear. You just looked at it as you keep going till you get either killed or dropped. I didn't look on it as a fear. From the time I left my wife in Aberdeen, I never had a fear I wasn't coming back. Don't ask me why. Don't ask me how. But I never had a fear I wasn't coming back. I didn't know whether I might be wounded, a leg off, an arm off, anything like that. But I always had that in my brain, I was coming back to see my family.
Did you find that other people were frightened in the Blitz? That
yeah,
said?
Yeah, quite a lot, quite a lot.
How did they show it?
Oh, lots of ways. Lots of ways. Singing, shouting to one another. There were lots of ways. Also, oh mind, I wasn't much out lads like that. I wasn't many of us out lads like that. Hi.
So, did you think public morale stood up very well in the Blitz?
Yes. In fact, I say that the Blitz stiffened public morale. Because the more that he was doing to you, the more you went to get back at him. He didn't regard the German people. He regarded the German people as Hitler. The more Hitler did to you, the more you went to get back at Hitler.
Was there any hatred of the pilots who were carrying out the bombing?
No, I wouldn't say. No, no. Although I've seen the Gurkhas shooting them in midair.
In England?
No, Middle East.
Any other memories of the Blitz?
Yeah, quite a few. We were told when the Blitz was coming to an end that anybody would not go overseas who went for the unexploded bombs. Went find unexploded bombs. So what do? We all volunteer en masse to go and find unexploded bombs. And we're going round and seeing a hole, and you're a big, long metal pole, and you went down there, and bang, 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 one here, boys, bomb disposal command and whip them up and get rid of them. But they used to put them on the marshes. They had the jeeps converted, and it was a big bomb. They used to put it in a cradle, two cradles, and they used to drive it out the marshes. And I'll tell you what, some of the engineers were driving out there. They were braver men than me, because they maybe had a 500-pound bomb at the back of them on there. And they used to drive on the marshes and then walk away with it. And if it went off, it went off. If no, they'd dismantle it and do everything to clear it up.
But wasn't it dangerous looking for the unexploded bombs?
Definitely. But then you see, we thought, oh, if I do this, I won't go overseas, I'll never be a soldier. I'll tell you one thing I noticed. I was a very, very big department store, Cobb's Corner in Sydenham. You can verify, you can look it up in the past and verify that. Cobb's Corner in Sydenham, we got a big night one night. And the whole river was on fire. And they come in there, and they dropped a lot there, but then they started going around the outskirts. It's more terrifying. And had Jimmy Adams had died, and I were doing Cobb's Corner. Just there, we were there. If they come too close, we would just walk into shelter and wait for us past and come out again. See if there's any people lying about there who maybe could help. And Cobb's Corner had big plate glass windows. And they did a lot of decorating then with that fancy paper. You know the rolls of fancy paper you used to get for window dressing and that. And Jimmy says to me, Andy, come here and see us. I wondered what it was. I thought something was wrong and hurried up. He says, no, don't hurry. It's all right. I was bombed dropped there, and the paper being light, the bomb must have pushed the window out, a plate glass window, pushed it out. The paper being lighter got whipped out, and the window went back in place. And the paper was up the window, and the window, and the frame, and to another side. I never ever seen anything like that. It was just a complete. It was odd.
Now, can you tell me how you came to be in Tobruk, please?
Yeah. We went on a Ascanius. Ascanius was the ship that took us out. We took. They were training pilots then in Canada. So it was 26 ships in our convoy. We went almost to Canada to cover the pilots and their ship. And we got a escort from the Royal Navy in case any trouble. And then we left them so far off Newfoundland. And the ship had to steam full ahead to take him away. From there, we come back and went across the Atlantic again to Dakar, West Africa. And we didn't know what was going on, because it was a complete news blackout. When we got to Dakar, they said, well, the war was passed here. The war had finished there, and the Frenchmen there had packed up. So we went down to the Cape. Went around the Cape. We landed in Cape of Good Hope. On one. Can't remember the date now. But Tom Chisholm and I went ashore there. So when we went ashore there, we were coming out to the docks, and I heard somebody shouting, "Andy! Andy!" I just said, "Tom, who the devil's he shouting for?" He says, "Well, there's only us here, Andy. Andy." So I looked around. Here's my cousin from Aberdeen, who had went to teach the black man. See, the trawlers were built in Aberdeen, the Ben Lines, and they took him to South Africa, and he was one of them that went to teach the fishermen of South Africa how to fish. And it was my own cousin, Sandy Christie.
Was this in Durban?
No, Cape Town. Cape Town.
Which year is this, 41 or 42?
No, it's 42. It's coming up for 42. So, he says, Sandy says to me, he says, "Don't go up the desert." He says, "I'll fix you up here." I says, "No, Sandy." I said, "Oh, no." I said, "I've got my wife and a daughter at home." I said, "I'm going back to see them." We started and finished, I was going back, all the time. All the time.
Which unit were you in by now?
Signals.
Which unit of the signals?
A holding unit. A holding unit. Because we've been officially trained at the GPO school, Sydenham. And we just went overseas as a block. And then we went to Tel Al-Kabir. We went up there. But on the way up, we're playing bingo in the deck. You laugh at this. You must laugh at this. We're playing bingo on the deck, you know. They give you a card, and you. Jimmy Adams was there. Tom was there. Andy Christine was there. They were all friends of mine. I'm going up there. And I turn around to Jimmy. I say, "Jim, is my grandmother dead?" He says, "Put on your sun hat, you fool." See? He says, "Sun effect." And I said, "No." I said, "My grandmother's dead." So, landed at Portishead, well, the ship did, took off so many men there. I got a cable. Nearly I'll tell you. I took the cable back home. I don't know where it is now, but I took the cable back home. Right to the exact day. Right to the exact day. Whether it was... See, as the lads went away, my grandmother put a slip of a plant in the window for them. So before I went away, before I came out to Aberdeen and went away south, my grandmother shouted to me, "Come on down, there's something to let you see." And it was the fall of France then. The fall of France. She says, "See the plant, Sandra?" I says, "Ah." I says, "What's to do with that one?" She says, "A Jimbo's plant, my cousin." She says, "He's not dead, but he's having a rough time." Well, he fought the rear guard with the garden handlers to allow the engineers to blow up what they could blow up. And she knew by the plant.
Whether the plant died or not?
No, she knew that Jim Booth was having a rough time. The plant didn't die, but it wilted. All the rest were perfect. The speak about it gives me a funny feeling.
So how did you come to be in Tobruk?
Well, when we come up to Tel Al-Kabir, we reformed into 27th Searchlight Regimental Signals.
27th?
Searchlight. Regimental, RE, Royal Artillery Signals. And we had to go to Tobruk with the Searchlights and we established